times where you miss, a lot.
Yeah.
Where it's going to be almost everybody saying,
yay.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
It is 10:05 on January 34th, 2014. We have a special meeting for the City of Ocala Firefighters Retirement Plan. This special meeting is to have a disability hearing for Sean Kelly. The entire board is present, as well as Rob Altman, Jerry Tafoya, Sean Kelly, and Brad Hardy. All right. First thing on the agenda, the only thing on the agenda is the disability hearing. I'm just going to say a few things about it. Okay, well, this is a quasi-judicial hearing where the board actually sits as the judicial, you know, we make the decision. We also have government and the sunshine laws. I'm sure you're aware somewhat of the sunshine laws. So I just want to warn you that this meeting is open to the public. Anyone from the public may attend. This hearing may be on the internet for all to hear. There will be personal issues and medical information discussed. Some could be embarrassing in nature. Sunshine laws, unfortunately, they trump confidentiality laws, and none of this information can be held back from the public, other than phone numbers and Social Security and that kind of stuff. All paper records, we each have our disability packet. After the meeting, all of those records will be destroyed, except for one file copy will be kept. Do you understand all that, that it is sunshine and everybody's able to do that? Okay. If you decide to appeal any decision made by this board with respect to any matter considered at such meeting or hearing, you will need a record of the proceedings, which includes the testimony and evidence upon which the appeal is to be based. Our meeting is recorded. If you want a recording of the meeting, you can just get with Alicia and she can get you a recording of the meeting. All right, that being said, there are three components that will need to be proven in order to grant your disability. One is causation, what caused the problem. Was there, you know, and then that's where we will decide whether it's line of duty or non-line of duty. Was, you know, did something happen at work to make this a line of duty, or was it hereditary or some other form that, that caused it to make it a non-line of duty disability? The second thing you're going to have to prove is totality. The totality is the firefighter will be considered totally disabled if, in the opinion of the Board of Trustees, he or she is wholly prevented from rendering useful and efficient service as a firefighter. Okay? That means you cannot function as a firefighter in totality. And then the last one is permanency. A firefighter will be considered permanently disabled if, in the opinion of the board, he or she is likely to remain so disabled continuously and permanently. If you break a leg, you can be temporarily disabled, but your leg can heal and you can eventually come back. So that would not be a permanent disability. That would be a temporary disability. All right. If you would raise your right hand, please. Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, so help you God?
I do.
Okay. Now I'm going to ask you a question. Are there any objections to procedure? In other words, have you experienced any problems with this board, any problems getting documents, any problem, any issues not being answered, any calls not being returned, any issues with this board not giving you everything you needed? No issues whatsoever. Did you have sufficient time to prepare?
Yes.
Okay. So no issues whatsoever?
None.
Okay. So there, I'm assuming no objections to procedure. All right.
That being said, you can make an opening statement, or you can go straight to your case and just, what I'd like, like we discussed before, if you have an outline or whatever, start when you started having these medical problems, how long back, and what happened, and then what, and then how long they lasted, and then the next issue, and the next issue, and the floor is yours.
Okay. Thank you all for coming. I know it was kind of a quick thing Randy put together and everything else, but I do greatly appreciate it. My situation, my medical condition, the actual terms and names is primary sclerosing cholangitis, and I started with ulcerative colitis, the two together. Back in 1995, I started having some issues, digestive problems, pain and things like that. It wasn't until 1996 that I was diagnosed with those two problems. Things went into remission, they'd come, they'd go, it would flare up and go away. I was treated for several years through that time with doctors locally. Medications would work, wouldn't work, things like that. That progressed on and I dealt with it until 2004. I had started going to Shands in Gainesville around 2002. Around 2004, they decided that the ulcerative colitis, which is ulcers in the colon, that they were so severe they were worried about rupture. So at which time they planned surgery to remove the entire colon, take the small intestine, and they fold it over on itself, put it together, and make a colon. And then they connect all the plumbing back so that it works. And I went through that surgery in 2004. And that was good for a couple months. Then I started having issues, more pain, more problems. Through the next 7 years, I continued going to the same doctors at Shands Hospital. With each year, my conditioning worsened. At the time, they were telling me that I was part of the 6% that had an issue with the procedure, and they called it, they said that I just had a reaction to it, that I would, that the pouch itself stayed infected all the time. Well, what I ended up finding out is in 7 years later, 2011, I went to the Mayo Clinic in Jacksonville, Florida. I found out they were on my insurance, and I decided to transfer up there because nothing Shands was doing was helping. I was just getting worse. Went up there in July of 11. In October of 11, they did surgery again. They had to remove the J-pouch that Shands made, and they had to remove the majority of my small intestine that was remaining, because the massive infection from doing the J-pouch incorrectly. So that was a big kicker for me. I didn't quite realize that was the issue, that it was a messed up surgery.
Okay, so I want to just stop you for 1 second, just so the board understands. J-pouch, that's like a colostomy, but it's an internal colostomy?
Yes, it's made from your small intestine.
Right.
Yes.
But you had to empty it? Did you have to empty
no.
it?
No. Okay. All that, if you think of it like plumbing, everything was still correct, was still connected. I would go to the bathroom like a normal person still and everything, only the colon was completely removed and the small intestine made that pouch where the colon would have been.
Okay.
So everything was connected. At those times, I was even still working the fire truck. I was in the bathroom 24 to 26 times a day with diarrhea. And it was an instant thing. It was all of a sudden, I got to go. Lots of pain, lots of swelling, lots of issues. And it didn't matter if I was sleeping. And the only thing that seemed to stop it was the adrenaline when we were on a call. Didn't ever have any problem. But once that started to slow down, and it was pretty bad. Back up to the Mayo Clinic, the doctor was pretty surprised. That J-pouch is supposed to be made to specific dimensions and specifications. Mine was 3 times too large. It was 30 centimeters. It's only supposed to be 10. Both openings at both ends were narrow and constricted. All of these things created the chronic infection because this pouch was made incorrectly. That was completely removed, like I said, along with the majority of my small intestine. In turn, they had to now put an ostomy bag. I have a, and it's called an ileostomy as opposed to colonoscopy, because it's connected to my ileum, which is the medical term for small intestine. They actually took so much of the small intestine that generally my bag sits here above my waistline. Generally, they're below the waistline. They didn't have enough intestine left, healthy intestine, to put it below my waistline, so mine sits up high on my stomach. I recovered well from the surgery. A lot of the pain was gone. The bathroom issues were gone, because now I just had a bag and had to learn how to do my job with that. And I learned at the time that I was the only firefighter in the state of Florida working, actually putting on bunker gear and going and fighting fire with an ostomy bag. And that information came from the fire college, the fire marshal's office. That was just one issue. That was just dealing with the ulcerative colitis. Now, the primary sclerosing cholangitis is a separate issue, and that is an issue that deals with the liver. And that is, your liver as a whole organ has just a small tube that drains. And that tube is called your bile duct. And the primary sclerosing cholangitis is the bile duct hardening and closing off. Kind of the way people's arteries do, and they get all the plaque buildup. It's kind of the same thing, and that's what is happening with the primary sclerosing cholangitis. That bile duct closes off, and it does not let the liver drain the waste that it's removing from your bloodstream, and that drains into your intestinal tract and then out. Mine's backed up and causes inflammation of the liver. The liver not to function in such a way. It still produces enzymes that it's supposed to, but it's not draining properly. So I get a backup of this waste that's supposed to be coming out and gets backed up through my system. It's caused an enlarged spleen, because the liver's not properly able to filter the blood. The blood then reroutes through the spleen. The spleen catches all my platelets, chews them up, so I have very thin blood. I bleed very easy because I have a very low platelet count. I've had emergency blood transfusions in the past.
Are you on Coumadin?
I am currently on Coumadin. The other thing that the bile duct has also caused with the liver is called portal hypertension. And there is a portal vein that supplies the liver, because the liver is not able to filter that blood the way it should. It's backed up in there. It causes that pressure to back up into the portal vein. So I have portal hypertension, which is an elevated pressure within that. It's kind of like you take a garden hose and kink the end off. If you leave it too long and you got a cheap hose, it'll start to swell and get a bubble in that. That's what the portal hypertension does. Also, because the blood's not moving at a sufficient rate, I've built up clots in two of the blood vessels supplying the liver. And with all of this, it has caused me to be in need of a liver transplant. I'm currently 3 points below making the liver transplant list, but because of the other clinical issues, which the doctor have mentioned in some of the paperwork in their letters, the clinical issues along with the things that are going on with my liver is causing other stuff to make my need for a liver a little more important than just the set of items that they currently go off to score you for a transplant. And here the doctor even makes a comment about if he had a donor match, he would have already done the transplant because of the clinical issues that aren't addressed in the scale. Most of that is made up with, is your liver producing the proper enzymes? Mine does all that, it just doesn't filter anything causing the backup. Those are my main medical conditions. Since the middle of this past year, I've also developed something called hepatic encephalopathy, which I'm currently being treated for with some pretty strong antibiotics. This is because of the waste buildup, because of the lack of liver able to dispose of this, it causes an infection in the brain. There's minor swelling, but mostly infection, and it causes memory lapse. And inability to concentrate, kind of like beginning stages of Alzheimer's type things like that, a little dementia, but not, it's at a minimal level now, and it's kind of being in check, kept in check with the medications that I'm on. It also has, it disrupts judgment and your thought process. It slows that very much.
Cognitive.
Yes. Yes. Very good. Thank you. Now, along with all of those, I have other issues that happen, and that is my ability to physically exert, because these symptoms have backed up so long, because the liver has not been functioning properly for so many years. My body's starting not to handle compensating as well. This also goes along with the fact that I'm 44 years old now, so as I'm getting older, and the longer all of this is done, I'm not able to compensate so well. I get winded very easy. For 3 months, I wore a cardiac monitor because I was having palpitations. I had issues where I was very short of breath for doing nothing, walking from one end of the house to the other. Things like that were coming along. Like Randy said, to deal with part of this with the clots that were in the portal veins, I was put on blood thinners, so some of it had to do with my blood being so thin. And at that same time, which was around March of last year, is when a lot of this started to come together and things were all just compounding on each other, the doctors started to put me off from work. So I went through that procedure for a couple of months, not being at work, and then Human Resources let me come back. They gave me 90 days to get better, to get a letter from the doctor that says I can perform the duties as a firefighter and go back to my job, and I was not able to do that. The end of that 90 days was December 22nd. And at which time the city puts me down as voluntarily leaving, which is absolutely not correct, because I would have kept my job in a training position or one of our desk positions. I was told that I was done at work, so my last date employed was the 22nd of December because of all these issues. And personally, I feel that I'm not able to do the job. I stayed as long as I could. I've had Jim Williams on my crew, and Jerry Tafoya was on my crew, and I've always told everybody at the department, my crew and my superior officers, that when my medical condition got to a point, I wouldn't try to stay. I'm not going to put any of the guys' lives at stake because I wanted to keep my job, which is why I was kind of hoping that the city would have worked with me a little bit, put me at a desk job. Just before all of this ended, we had an opening for the training division. I applied for that. I was qualified. I was finally moved over into that position. But technically, you still have to remain a certified firefighter, being able to perform those duties. And I'm physically not capable of performing those duties anymore.
So. Okay. Excellent job.
Thank you.
Excellent job explaining. Do members have any question for Mr. Kelly?
I just have a question about the type of disability retirement we're considering.
Right.
Is it in service?
This would be a non-service.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I just want to say, you know a lot about your condition. I'm impressed at your the detail. That you're familiar with. I'm familiar with your condition. I have a family member who has almost exact condition that you do.
Uh-huh.
She's a little older than you are, but she doesn't have any colon left either, and mm-hmm. has been suffering since she was in her 20s. So I'm very familiar with your condition.
How many years of service did you have with O'Connor?
24 and a few months.
24 and change?
Yeah.
Okay. Just some nice information for the board. When was your retirement eligibility date?
April 20, I believe, off the top of my head, it was April 24th of this year.
Okay.
He would have been eligible to retire anyways.
Right.
but he's not going to like that, so that's why, I mean, had he been to that date, he could just have retired, but being that they terminated him prior to, he tried to get them to keep him employed until that date, and they wouldn't.
I can't believe you've worked as long as you've worked, to be honest with you.
It was tough at some times, it was tough.
Believe me, it's a horrible, you know, set of symptoms to manage.
I just want to mention, as Sean Jr. representative going through the end of this, he also did make requests to the city for any reasonable accommodations anywhere in the city, was denied. That he did for a desk job anywhere, not just even if the fire department was denied that. So.
That's there's a request
for
reasonable accommodations right in here.
He did ask for reasonable accommodations. It was denied.
They did accommodate him for 90 days, but said that after that 90 days he was done. He could not work any longer.
Yeah, but he, like I said, even anywhere in the city, they denied him work.
He did request reasonable accommodation. He said he'd take a desk job, you know, if they would let him.
Randy, I've got a couple comments.
Yes, Larry, go ahead.
I can certainly sympathize with what you're doing. I have an ostomy.
Do you?
Your ostomy. There's a group here in Ocala. It's an ostomy support group. I would strongly recommend you might want to attend their meetings. Very helpful.
Okay.
One thing I'm curious about, they didn't try a spit from your liver.
At one point back in 2001, they did like an angioplasty where they put a balloon in.
Yeah. That
thing is supposed to be approximately 7 millimeters. Mine was at 2, and they were able to open it up to 5 millimeters.
Yeah.
That bile
valve. It was completely blocked.
It was nearly completely blocked.
Yeah, that's what happened.
Is it?
One thing, I really went through this reading material. I used to sell this stuff. So I'm very familiar with how it works. One thing I didn't see in there that was very clear, pardon my voice, is partial disability. There wasn't much over there at all.
With the way that our plan works, I know with workers' comp, they have all kinds, you can be 10% disabled or 15% disabled, or, you know, they have all these stages of disability with us, with the fire plan. And the police plan, it's either you're totally disabled or you're not. There's nothing in between.
Well, speaking of total disability, there was a part in there that said that an illness is to be treated as job incurred. So whether it was happened on the job or just got sick, doesn't make any difference.
Well, that's not exactly true.
Yes, right. It is. It's right in the reading material.
Where?
No.
I forget where it was.
Okay.
But anyway, he said that what he's got is an illness.
Right.
Okay. And the way I read the reading material, that's treated as job incurred, the same.
Under the presumptive laws of Florida?
Sir?
Under the presumptive laws here in Florida?
Under the stuff that I've
seen. That's what I'm saying, is that were they mentioning the presumptive laws? Because there are presumptive laws here in the state of Florida, Missouri, Hart-Long Bill, things of that nature.
But that's good for him.
Yeah.
But there's no such thing as a partial disability under our plan.
We're not saying there's a partial disability.
I know that.
Yeah, you're right. If you're asking the question,
it's
correct. There's no such thing as a partial disability.
About 90% of disabilities, by the way, are sickness, not job incurred or accident.
Yeah.
Just interesting. I did some research on this, on the tax consequences for you. Mm-hmm. If you have an individual disability plan that you own, the benefits would come to you tax-free. I can't seem to find a place where it says where yours would be tax-free or not, but that'd be a huge benefit to you if there weren't taxable income.
Mm-hmm. It would be.
Yeah. Now, your retirement stuff, of course, is going to be ordinary income.
Right.
Okay. I can sure tell you where he's coming from with ostomies. That's not a fun thing, guys.
Right.
It's extremely unpleasant, as I'm sure your relatives could tell you. But my last comment is that I would really like to thank you for all your service as a fireman.
I appreciate that.
And I can just imagine what you're going through. I went through 10 and a half hours of cancer surgery a year ago, and I'm still not recovered from that. Mm-hmm. So it's, that's why they call it a practice. They practice a lot.
Yeah, oh, they do. They practice a lot.
But that's pretty much all I've got.
Okay. If you open your packets to the first disability application, I'm just going to clear up. Larry, on the line of duty and non-line of duty, if you go to the very back page, page 5, his doctor filled it out, and on number 3 there. What a line of duty disability is, if you fall off of a building and you wreck your spine and you can't work anymore, that's a line of duty disability. If you are fighting a fire and get burned and can't come back because you, you know, a line of duty means something that occurred in the line of duty. That's why we have line of duty and non-line of duty. And if you look at number 3, it's, it, you know, his doctor states, you know, that it did not occur in the course and scope of the employee's duties. The only difference with that is we have a presumption law, and if it's a cardiac disease, if it's a, it's called a heart and lung bill, if it's a cardiac disease, then it is considered in the line of duty. But this is not cardiac related. It's I don't know if it's hereditary or from his colitis or what it is. But
it's an autoimmune condition.
Right.
That's generally just happened.
Yeah.
I had tried to go forth with trying to prove that it was something that I was exposed to while on the job.
Right.
And the doctors that I went to, the union even sent me to a doctor in Orlando that specialized in autoimmune problems for firefighters and police. Mm-hmm. And they couldn't definitely say it was related to anything.
Yeah.
And back then, in the early 90s, we didn't keep very good records of the hazards that we were exposed to, even on the hazmat team.
Right.
So it's always just been that it was an illness that I got that was genetic.
Right.
And being autoimmune in nature.
But they never confirmed as to why. It's not that they proved something else, it's that they can't prove anything.
Yes. It is that we cannot prove that it happened.
Right.
It's not disproved, right. it just cannot be proved.
They can't prove any cause, right. So it's not that it's something else, it's that they don't know what the cause was. How long did you work with the fire department before you started experiencing symptoms?
I started in, on my start date was April 30th of 89. Mm-hmm. I did not get symptoms and have anything show up on my annual physical or blood work until 95.
Okay, so about 6 years on the job before you started.
6 years on the job, and I went, my liver, and it was my liver, the SGTP, and when you do a liver panel, I went from all of those 6 years to being everything in the normal to the first time they did it, I was 4 or 5 times over the high limit on those liver areas, and it was just like that it happened. So that's why we kind of thought, for what, you know, that it was job related, because there were some instances where we had a couple of different calls that were
look at
bad.
Article 9.03.
Okay.
And what section are we at?
Disability.
It's only the second page on the right side.
903.
9.03. He's got 2 years credited service.
Yeah, he's getting this.
That's where he is.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where he is.
But there's just a difference between non-service incurred and service incurred.
Right.
That's all.
Mm-hmm. What I'm saying, it doesn't mean he's not eligible. That's what I'm trying to say.
Correct. He's eligible.
Yeah,
he's
of course.
Eligible. Yeah. Okay, that's what I'm trying to say.
All right, I want to go to the other two elements that we have to prove, and that would be totality and permanency. If you go to the back page of the very back cover, medical information, both of the doctors, it says it numerous times here. Let's see. Not the top green page, but the next green page. It's November 8th letter at the very bottom. The last sentence is that it is my opinion that Mr. Sean Kelly is Michael Sean Kelly is completely disabled from performing the duties of a firefighter. Completely. And then if you go to the next green page, first page, Mayo Clinic. The third paragraph down, it says, based on my clinical experience with end-stage liver disease secondary to primary sclerosis, cholangitis, and his clinical progression over the last 6 to 12 months, I do not believe the patient is medically capable of functioning in his role as a fireman. For the issues noted above, I believe that he should be considered for a permanent disability from his job in the in the firefighting realm. So I think that covers the permanency issue. And the totality means that he cannot function as a firefighter. I think that we can all agree that he is totally disabled. Okay. A few more questions that I'd like to ask. I was going to ask what your life's been like these last 6 months to a year, but I think you did a pretty good job explaining that already. Are you employed anywhere else?
No.
Okay. Are you cutting trees and hauling trees and lifting heavy rocks and this kind of stuff?
No.
No strenuous activity?
Nope.
Are you participating in any sporting activities?
No.
Are you, and have you been, compliant with all of your doctor's prescribed medications?
Absolutely.
Okay. Have you been using illegal drugs or narcotics? Okay. Have you been excessively using habitual drugs or intoxicants or narcotics?
Absolutely not.
This is in state law. I need to ask.
I'm very proud to say that I've actually never, ever used drugs.
Okay, this injury or ill disease was not sustained by the firefighter while willfully and illegally participating in fights, riots, or civil insurrections, or while committing a crime?
No.
Did this injury or disease sustained by the firefighter while serving in any of the armed forces?
No.
Did this injury or disease sustained by the firefighter after your employment was terminated?
No.
Okay. With that, I'd like to entertain a motion.
I move that we accept this application for disability and approve, same.
Second.
Okay, motion by Fagan, second by Estrada. Is there any, this is a for non-service incurred disability effective January 31st, 2014. If there's no opposition to unanimous approval, seeing, hearing none, the motion carries. Okay, Sean, I've got some papers. Don't leave. I've got some final papers for you to fill out and sign and everything. We need to go up to Alicia's office and get your bank account information and all that, where your check is going to go to.
Okay.
Under other general business, we do have a meeting next week, or February 7th at 9:30 a.m. in this room. Okay, Esther, are you going to be here as far as you know? Jim?
February 7th, absolutely.
February 7th, 9:30 a.m. And that's the actuary is going to be here. He's going to be presenting the actuarial report. And the consultant's going to be here. He's going to be presenting his quarterly report. Larry, are you going to be able to make it? Or
no, I can't. That's what I want to talk about for a minute. These people are all our vendors, right? We pay them to do a specific thing.
Yeah.
It stuns me that they can't seem to come up with a correct date. That's totally unacceptable.
Mm-hmm.
It should not be for their pleasure. Mm-hmm. It should be for ours.
Right.
I purposely set up a visit to Moffitt to be at that meeting, and then it got changed because of their problems. Now, they somehow have got to figure out a way to give us an exact date way out in advance.
Okay.
Because I really resent being put me in a position like that, because I make every effort to attend these.
I know you do, Larry, and I apologize for that.
But I think we need to let them know about that.
Okay, we will do that. And what we really need to do is get a meeting time set up. The problem with having it the first Monday of the month is, as some of you members remember, they don't have the number. They don't get the numbers from the banks and from the investment consultants and from the managers in a short enough time to put a complete report together by the first Monday in the month following the quarter end.
Well.
So what we need to do, so what I wanted to do was change it to a week later. That way they don't have any excuses. So if we do it on the second Monday, the problem with that is you've got the general employees who have this room in the morning, and the police officers have this room in the afternoon. So we can't, the room's not available, we can't do it on the same day that they're doing it. So I said, well, okay, let's do it Tuesday. Tuesday is city council meetings. You know, city council meetings, you know, city council has their meetings every Tuesday and their workshops on the opposite, every 2 weeks, and then their workshops on the opposite Tuesdays. So the room's not available on Tuesday. What I would like to do is look at, because we've got the recording device here, I would like to see if we can get a recording device. There's another, there's a couple more conference rooms in City Hall that we could use to have our meetings. I'd like to have them on the Tuesday following the general and police plan, but the only issue is we can't have them in this room. We would have to find one of the other rooms, and the only issue with that is getting the recording device. If we can get with City Clerk or the city and somehow come up with a way to get the recording device, I would like to hold them on the second Tuesdays. And just, I don't have to be in this room. If we can go into one of the other conference rooms, that's fine with me.
I've been reading in the paper about all these proposed changes to the pension plan.
I'm sorry?
All the proposed changes to the pension plan. Have you been contacted on that at all?
No.
I don't understand what our function is then.
Yeah, well, we're here to assist the city and the union in making these plan changes, okay?
Well, we so far have, no one's asked us anything.
I agree, but what's happening is they're getting all their stuff together, you know, and then soon it's going to start. The problem is the labor union, the old contract, because they went to impasse with the old contract, and then one thing happened after another, they haven't even started negotiating this new contract. So as soon as the previous contract, which expired in October of 2011, expired in 2011, and then there was another one that started in 2011, went through 2012. It was October 1, 2011 through September 2012. They negotiated that. They couldn't come to an agreement. It went to impasse. The special master ruled. The city came back and forced everything. The special master said this, and they said that. And anyways, then it went to...
I mean, it sounds like to me we're being sort of kept out of the loop on this whole thing.
Not necessarily. It's just those things have been going on, and until those are resolved, the minute after those issues are resolved and we get a contract, we'll start negotiating for this contract,
okay,
and we will start negotiating for pensions. It's going to happen, I'm assuming, in the next 3 or 4 months, maybe.
Speaker, any?
Yes.
I agree with you. They should be giving you information now on what they're actually looking for.
That's right.
It shouldn't have anything to do with contract negotiations, because if that's their intent, they've already started information with the rest of City Council and with the workshop. I believe they should come, like you said. You guys aren't being kept in the loop of what they're looking for, what ideas or anything they have. It doesn't have to be in negotiations for them to talk to you about it.
Yeah, I'm asked questions all the time by people I know, and I have no answers.
Yeah.
I don't know what they're considering.
They haven't come to us, and I'm the president of the union. They haven't come to us on any discussions of it either. It's all kept up here on this floor.
I think the very least we ought to have copies of their, anything that pertains to this pension plan, the things they're discussing.
Yeah, but the problem is legally that can be held back because that has to do with negotiation. You know, there are sunshine laws. There are sunshine laws that allow for open government, but there are certain exceptions to the sunshine law. One of those is when you're negotiating with a labor union, then they can have workshops out of the sunshine and certain things like that. I'm not. Go ahead.
They spoke about it in their general workshops where it is open for everybody to get. And because we are not in negotiations right now, it is about, should be available to you guys, because we are not in negotiations and they can't be making a, for better terms, it's like this is a wish list of things they want to do or want to bring to the table, but it's not privy to the Sunshine Law as far as negotiations yet, because we are not, that's not even on the table. It's not an open contract or anything.
Okay, so...
So at this point, they should be making contact with this board, letting them know what their intentions are.
Okay. They have not...
Because they've had two workshops on it. They had two workshops. Yeah, one yesterday, right? One was yesterday on it, and one several weeks ago on it. Like I said, the workshops that were on the calendar. But like I said, haven't come to either. Okay. Obviously, you guys...
Do you know if those workshops are...
Open to the public, yes.
Are they recorded?
Yep.
Okay. All right, so...
I agree with you. They should be letting me know. You're the board overseeing it, and if you have any ideas, they have any ideas, it'd be good for them to give them to you guys to...
Well, actually, there's just so much stuff going on with pension plans. Look at Detroit. Yeah. My God.
Yes, I just sat with a Detroit firefighter this last week and had a discussion with him. There's a mess.
Are there retirees up there losing benefits too?
Not yet. The court system opened it up that there's possible that they could, but they have so many things they have to do before they go to that extreme. They have to exhaust every other effort, and that's the last ditch effort that they're going to, is taking it from the actual retired people that are already on retirement.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I can. Why don't you write a letter?
Because I'm not in negotiations right now. That's
probably something that we should communicate as a board.
The board has to. If I
technically we're not a function of the union, so it's really inappropriate for us to communicate with them through the union.
So should we request from the send a letter to city manager requesting all the information that they are receiving from their actuary? I mean, I'm not sure exactly how to proceed.
Just have, well, I think if it involves the pension, I mean, we should know.
All right.
What the idea is.
At least something to the effect of, we know you're talking about it, we know you have plans, and we're the people that run the thing, we'd like to know what's going on. I mean, don't let me write the letter because, what's going on here? Okay. You know, we're only the people in charge of these millions of dollars and trying to make it work. It might be nice if we know what's going on with
them. Okay. I can draft a letter and then I'll run it by.
The other thing, Randy, is Tallahassee providing police and fire with legislative updates on the bills that are being considered?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Well, I mean, we do know what the bills that are being considered, but you know, you can't always. I mean, we can't make our decisions based on what they might do.
No, I understand that.
They might be doing this for 3 or 4 years now, and none of us seems to get through, so...
And Weatherford, the one that he sent the exact bill he proposed at the end of this year, didn't even change the wording, just changed the date. That was last year, when it failed last year.
Right.
He proposed it the same exact way right now.
It didn't get through last year. Whether it'll get through this year,
yeah,
nobody
but
knows.
But he didn't change anything.
Right.
A few sponsors are different, but that's about it. I just actually got a copy of this last.
Yeah, I was reading about it last night.
Stay on top of this, because the long-term outlet for pension plans is terrible.
Yeah. Right. But the other thing you need to look at, the other thing we need to look at there too is if you look at uniform service pensions in its totality across the country, you are correct. There are problems out there. However, many of the problems, and I run into this, in my family and other professionals and things like that, is there is a vast difference about what is going on in the entire country to what is going on in Florida to what is going on in the city limits of Ocala. And our condition is extraordinarily different than many out there, and better. So I think our challenge from personally and communication, if we can talk to the city manager, is that we are not experiencing the difficulties that we're hearing about in the news in other places. You know, New Jersey's problem is not our problem.
Right, and Chicago and Rhode Island and Illinois, they just did not fund their pension plans. They just said, because in the state of Florida, you have to. It's mandated and it's mandatory that you, whatever the actuary says you put into that plan, you have to put into that plan. In Illinois, they say, well, we don't have the money, so we're not going to put in this year. Oh, next year, oh, we don't have the money, we're not going to put in this year either, you know. they're not mandated in those places, and those are the headlines that we're reading, you know.
You know, if you look back into the history of pension plans, it's really interesting. The city employees, police, administration, and firemen, they were grossly underpaid. So one of the things they use to attract them is the pension plan.
Exactly.
Yeah. When I started 24 years ago, that's what attracted me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Benefits and a pension.
I was making more money working outside of the fire department before I did the job I quit to come work for the fire department. I was making almost double what I started here at I started here at $16,500 working for the city in 1990. So me and Sean started
when I started
the same thing. I left the job making $30,000 back then to come here for the benefits and for the pension.
I did the same thing.
I started at $200 a month. That's not a joke. It's true.
I believe it.
But I agree. I think that I also think that working together, I don't like the way the whole thing went down with the general employees. Anything about it I didn't like. And
was their board informed on all this, how it was going on?
Yeah. Yeah, well, but they had a lot of workshops, and it took over a year. Took a year and a half, better than a year, almost 2 years, for them to get through all of what they got through. So it was kind of a little bit of a different thing. And they were not contract employees either, so they didn't have anybody speaking for the employees. Just a few employees got up and spoke.
You know, I'm curious about our actuary. Is he going to just report to us what we've got right now? Or is he going to give us some ideas of if we do so and so and so and so, what's going to happen?
I think he's going to say what we have right now, and then what we can do is, you know, once the negotiating process starts, or I'll write a letter to the city manager stating that we would like to get involved sooner rather than later.
Good.
You know, if we can get involved sooner, then we can direct our actuary to say, okay, show, you know, give us 5 or 10 different ways we can reduce the cost, you know, and bring down the unfunded liability, you know, give us some options and some different things that you can come up with that will reduce the cost and that will get it, you know, that will bring costs down more in line with what the city feels they can afford.
Has he factored in the disability payments in
the
plan?
Yes.
Yeah, he looks at more factors than you and I can come up with, and puts together and determines what everything costs. You know, on average, X amount of people go on disability per year. On average, these many people leave for other employment. On average, these many people retire. I mean, everything. You know,
salary increases.
I remember
inflation is going to be X amount.
Yeah, the last actuary's meeting, the pension system actually made money because none of us got a raise. You know, and actually the pension was cheaper than they expected.
Have you had any problems recruiting new employees with all this mess going on with our pension plans?
Yes. We're actually not only recruiting, we're actually losing mid-level employees because of it.
Yeah.
Mid-level, we're losing experienced employees going to other cities. You know, the city of Ocala is the only city in the state of Florida, the only municipality in the state of Florida that hasn't given a pay increase in the last 6 years? The only.
That has not given
a pay increase in the last 6 years.
Well, they've given lots of pay increases to certain individuals.
Yes.
But not to the rank and file.
Not what they want to consider a raise.
Not a COLA.
Not adjustments. I'm talking, you know, we've seen that.
Right.
200 adjustments per city manager, but I'm talking about actual raise.
Right.
To employees.
Well, if my house ever gets its old file, we'll make it on the side that says, I approved your...
Believe it or not, that's one thing about firemen that doesn't affect
us. I know you're
about to say that. That's one thing that never comes into mind.
Last thing we looked at.
The citizens, if they knew, I think what the struggles we have with the management would be a completely different scenario. Mm-hmm. The citizens don't count treat us well. So.
And they approve of us very well.
Best approval rating out of any department in the city. Highest rating. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I will draft a letter to the city manager requesting that we get, you know, that they involve us in some of the potential changes that they have coming up so we can have our actuary look at it and maybe we can come to, you know, agreement on some of the issues. And other than that, we've got our meeting next week. And anybody else have anything? Okay. With no further business for the board, the meeting is adjourned at 11 o'clock.